And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this preview edition of the Gophers versus Buffalo Bulls of the MAC conference coming up on Thursday night. So here we are late Tuesday night after Luke was gracious enough to let me get a couple of fantasy football drafts in. So it's a little bit past our bedtimes.
So Ryan, this is the hardest preview episode we have all year. We haven't seen a single football game. We have nothing to base this on. We're basing it purely on paper. There's a new football coach at the University of Minnesota. The Buffalo Bulls are coming off, what, a 1-11 season?
2-10.
I mean, this is arguably the hardest game to preview, but we will do our darndest.
Yes, and it's so tough because there's no data points to kind of give yourself or give anybody a point of reference that, I mean, we're going to tell you all about what Buffalo did in 2016, and hint, it wasn't very pretty. That's why PJ's Western Michigan team beat them either 36 or 39 to nothing. This isn't a very good team on paper, and they don't have a ton of experienced players coming back that should be giving Minnesota a lot of trouble. But as Luke said, it is game one, and especially for the coaching staff too. Yes, it's a benefit to Minnesota that PJ and staff was able to go against this Buffalo team last year, and it's the same coaching staff coming back for year three. So whatever they had for Buffalo week last year, they're probably putting that forward towards Buffalo week this year. So that is an asset for Minnesota. But again, it's game one. You don't know how many trick plays you're going to see. Maybe they're going to switch around some things in their offense. We're going to have to find out. But it is pretty tough to give a preview for folks, an actual preview. But we're going to do our darndest.
All right, let's actually start with the Gophers, and let's start with the depth chart. And what I want to – my first question for you, Ryan, looking at this depth chart is – we knew that Tracy Clay's depth charts were basically worthless. Same with Jerry Kill. So would you put this as worthless or not worthless, the very first depth chart from PJ Fleck?
Oh, I think it's somewhere in between, probably. There are some good things in terms of that we can actually draw from this. And we on Gopher Media Twitter were raising a ruckus here in the last 48 hours because we had no depth chart. So we didn't have anything to kind of compare to when you see all these other teams releasing their depth charts on Sunday and Monday. And here we are Tuesday morning and still no depth chart. So I kind of put on Twitter, so is Minnesota the last team to release one here? And people are like, well, Jim Harbaugh at Michigan hasn't even released a roster for 2017 because Florida hasn't released their depth chart in terms of who's starting. So, I mean, they're playing games between Michigan and Florida. But then you look at Minnesota and it's like, guys, we're like 48 hours away from game time when we're playing the freaking Buffalo Bulls. Like, this isn't Florida. Like, we don't need to hide anything. But it's somewhere in between, Luke. So when you look at let's start with the offensive line. Not a whole lot of surprises. We did mention on Gopher Illustrated in the last 24 hours that it is likely that Garrison Wright was probably going to be your starter at right guard. And here comes the depth chart, and he's the starter at right guard over Vincent Calhoun. Not a big surprise, as I think Vincent Calhoun is probably the weakest link on that offensive line, as usually guards are. Just doesn't have enough foot speed for me, and he doesn't have exactly the greatest of punches in terms of when he's getting into his pass sets, and he tends to, especially in pass rushing situations, get blown past. So Garrison Wright, while he is listed as the starter, sources have told me don't expect him to play 75, 80 snaps. I'm expecting like a 50-50 kind of rotation between Garrison Wright, who's working himself back from a back injury, and then Vincent Calhoun will spell him there at right guard. So when you look at the offensive line in general, you'll notice Nick Conley, someone from Red Wing, Minnesota, now in his redshirt sophomore season. He's your starter at right tackle. No surprise, Donnell Green at left tackle. Monticello's Connor Olson in his redshirt freshman year is going to be thrown into the fire right away at left guard. Jared Weiler, someone who was on the Remington watch list, but I don't really place anything into watch list considering Rashad Still made the Biletnikoff watch list, and he's not even starting, and he won't be starting to start the season. So when you look at the O-line rotation, Donnell Green, Nick Conley, your starters, but your swing tackle is going to be true freshman Blaze Andrews. he's just more farther along than Sam Schluter. So you have Marshall, Minnesota competing with Victoria, Minnesota, Meyer Lutheran there. And Blaze is just further along. So if an injury happens to Donnell Green or Nick Conley, well, you're going to see Blaze Andres be slotted in at right tackle. So say Donnell Green goes down. I say Nick Conley goes to left tackle. Blaze Andres stays at right. Nick Conley goes down. Blaze Andres just comes in at right. So that's going to be your swing tackle. You have either Calhoun or Wright, whichever one's not in the game, is your swing guard. And then Chaska's Bronson Dovich in his redshirt sophomore year is going to be your swing or is going to be your center. So there's your eight-man rotation, about the same way they do it in the NFL. So a true freshman, a redshirt sophomore, and a couple of seniors in terms of your backup guys. It could be a lot worse, but I'd really like if Minnesota was able to stay healthy on that offensive line.
All right, so when we look at quarterback, there's basically no surprise there. It's both Connor Rota and Demaree Croft. It's either or. I guess the question for you, Ryan, is who takes the first snap of the game?
If I was the head coach, and I think I would definitely put Demaree Croft out there, but I wonder if Fleck's with the air quote experience of Connor Rota, even though they've both played about the same amount of snaps in their careers. And but it's anybody's guess. Again, in terms of what's the rotation going to be, unfortunately, it's going to be that dreaded hot hand approach. Now, how does someone determine a hot hand? Folks, it's not as easy as watching, you know, Connor Rota throw 240-yard touchdown passes. He's not going to be pulled after that. But, you know, say they get some first downs and then there's a fumble. You know, are you going to pull the quarterback there? It's going to be interesting to watch. So if I was a betting man, I'd say Demaree Croft because I think he's more talented than Connor Rota. But, again, it's anybody's guess. And it sounds like they are truly going to try to get this thing 50-50 to start the season, which, again, I'm not a huge fan of. But I'm not the one that's being paid $600,000 or, in PJ Fleck's case, multi-million dollars to make that decision. So my guess would be Demaree Croft.
All right. So, again, tailback, another or situation with Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. Probably no surprise. This is probably one of the best backfield duos in the Big Ten. I really don't know what else we have to say about them. We have high expectations, and I think both will see quite a bit of playing time.
Yeah, I don't really think it matters who starts, especially in this kind of situation, because they are both going to be used heavily throughout the season. And if they both get somewhere between 15 and 18 touches a game, sweet. That means both should be fresh when they're getting their touches, especially in the second half when they should be able to break off some pretty long runs. So if you're looking at running back touches and you're looking somewhere around 40 a game, I'd expect them both to be around that 37, 38. Maybe you throw in Kobe McCrary for one or two. But if you're able to keep Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks healthy, especially as we get into the latter part of the conference season, you're looking at those last five games of Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska, Northwestern, and Wisconsin. If they're able to be pretty healthy and pretty fresh come those games, I'm going to be pretty excited because that means Minnesota's going to have a better chance to win. So I don't really think it matters who gets the carries to start. I wonder, you know, this is, again, totally theoretical, but as Minnesota's rotating quarterbacks, I wonder if they have a specific running back going in with a specific quarterback. So say Connor Rota gets Rodney Smith and Demaree Croft gets Shannon Brooks. I would put zero stock into that because I just thought of it off the top of my head, but it's something I know I'll be watching in the back of my mind here on Thursday night. So as long as Rodney and Shannon are fresh, which they should be, especially against Buffalo, who we will get to is an abysmal run defense last year, this should be pretty exciting to watch on Thursday.
Yeah, and the other thing that I'd be looking for, you know, last year we talked a lot about how often the both of them were on the field at the same time. Interested to see how much they try to work both of them on the field at the same time this year. I don't know if that's going to be an emphasis or not, but I'd just be curious. We know that they're two of the top playmakers on this roster, so just common sense says that try to get them on the field as much as possible.
I mean, if they're going to do that, they'd have to take off Demetrius Douglas or Philip Howard.
Right.
Two guys, especially when you're looking, you know, I know fans are clamoring for that jet sweep, that east and west instead of north and south action. Well, Demetrius Douglas and Philip Howard are pretty good at it. I watched them do it pretty much throughout fall camp, and I think Demetrius and Philip may be faster and have a little bit more acceleration than Rodney and Shannon. While Rodney and Shannon also have elite vision, Demetrius and Philip are pretty good at it. So I mean, I think Kirk Ciarrocca is much smarter than the average Minnesota offensive coordinator in the last decade. So maybe he does try to find a way to put both on the field. But I think Minnesota's got Two pretty good guys if they want to get that East and West action or bubble screens with Demetrius and Phillip.
I will still put my money on that that Rodney Smith is arguably probably the best slot receiver on this roster, even though he is a tailback. But
you can make the argument. I wish we would see it a little bit in practice, because I didn't see it at all in the six practices I was at fall camp for. But I think there's an argument to be made potentially if that ever would happen.
All right, tight end, another or situation, Nate Wozniak, Brandon Lingan, obviously two separate skill sets. You know, Wozniak more the blocker, Lingan more the pass receiver, but, you know, also an effective blocker, as you've noted multiple times on this podcast. I think it's good to have both of the seniors healthy. Lingan has been, you know, especially the one that has experienced more injuries, but really just nice to see him on the depth chart again.
It is. And as you noted, I think that when it's a rushing situation, you have Nate Wozniak on the field. When it's a passing situation, you have Brandon Lingan on the field to start. Again, Brandon Lingan last year in the non-conference proved, you can go back and watch the tape, that he's a still pretty effective run blocker. Now, I don't think that they're going to ask him to do a whole lot early in the season because, again, they want to make sure he's healthy come the Big Ten season. So you probably will see them alternating a lot, but it is nice to have both Wozniak and Lingan healthy right now.
All right, let's look at wide receiver. This is a position group. We're just looking for playmakers, right? That's the big question mark right now. Who's going to make plays? We know that Tyler Johnson's received a lot of praise in the press from Fleck and others, and as well as Demetrius Douglas. But I guess what I'm really interested in is you can't really have one. You can't just have two. You got to have a platoon of receivers, and just to see where that depth's going to come from.
You got to have a conglomerate, and you look at the starting three wide receivers per the depth chart. Tyler Johnson, no surprise. I think he's going to catch 75 balls. Eric Carter being listed as a starter is interesting to me, just because I maybe saw him targeted during 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 three times, maybe, in the six practices I was there. So you look at Rhoda, you look at Croft, two guys that didn't really target him too much during fall camp. We're going to have to see if that changes here. And then Demetrius Douglas is your third wide receiver there listed. True freshman from Portland, Oregon. I mean, there's a reason Minnesota beat out Oregon and Notre Dame for this kid. And he's extremely talented. Omar Douglas's son. I think he's going to have a huge role early on. The more interesting part, Luke, is the guys behind them. And I think that's the bigger storylines is Rashad still is not listed as a starter because he wasn't a starter after the first week of fall camp. He has to work through some mental side of the game issues more than anything. And if he can just prove that he can be consistent, I think he probably bumps Eric Carter out of that starting spot. And then you look at who's behind Eric Carter, Melvin Holland or Chris Autumn Bell. Now, if Chris Autumn Bell is healthy, I think you have to play him immediately because he was he stood out from day one at a wide receiver position that one has a lot of bodies, but two doesn't have a lot of talent. There's a difference between having a lot of scholarship bodies there and having an actual lot of talent. And Chris was arguably better than what Demetrius was. So if Demetrius is starting, if Chris Autumn Bell is healthy, which, again, he's working his way back from a lower leg injury. So whether he's healthy now or whether he's healthy come Maryland, those are two totally different decisions as a coaching staff you have to make. If he's healthy today on August 29th, well, then I think he absolutely deserves to be in the reps for Buffalo. Well, say he's not going to be healthy for another 4 weeks, and here we come preparing for Maryland. That's a totally different story. Maybe you want to look at redshirting them. So it's all going to depend on his health. Melvin Holland heading into his redshirt junior year, I don't really know what to expect. He's been in the rotation consistently throughout fall camp. He's made plays. Now, is he actually going to see the field? That's the final question. And the final guy we need to talk about, maybe we didn't talk about him enough during our when I talked about fall camp, was Phillip Howard, a redshirt freshman from Robbinsdale Cooper, someone that PJ Fleck and Matt Simon offered at Western Michigan, and they got the chance to have him here at Minnesota. During the spring, I don't think I really referenced Phillip Howard at all in Gopher Illustrated because he was consistently hurt. And so I really didn't know what to expect going into fall camp. First week of fall camp kind of comes and goes. You know, Howard's in a mix with about six other guys, but then we show up for the second week and he's getting reps with the ones. So if Phillip Howard is healthy, which he is, he has elite speed, he has elite acceleration, and he's someone that Minnesota can use, especially, I think, in the return game potentially. So You have a lot of unknowns at that receiver position outside of Tyler Johnson, so it's going to be fun to watch come non-conference.
Let's actually talk a little about that return position on special teams. Right now, your kick returner is Shannon Brooks. That's it. Nobody else, nothing listed, just Shannon Brooks.
So there's going to be two guys out there, and then they were during the very little times that they actually did special teams at fall camp. Now, it looks like no matter what side of the field they kick it to, unless, say, someone is on the home sideline standing on the hashes and they kick it towards that corner pylon, unless that happens, they're just going to defer to Shannon Brooks. So I'm not exactly thrilled about it, considering the big licks that these returners take on a week-by-week basis. I mean, you can watch any kind of special teams highlights of guys getting absolutely blasted. But there's no denying that Shannon has elite vision. And if he can find a way to get Minnesota instead of starting at the 25 to the 33 consistently, it's eight less yards that Minnesota has to get into field goal range or potentially score a touchdown, which is the ultimate goal. So I understand why they did it. And maybe that means that for the early part of the season, Rodney Smith is carrying more of the load of the offense while Shannon is being used as more of a kick returner slash 10 to 12 carry a game guy. I'm not sure. But it is interesting to note that Shannon Brooks is legit the only one listed at kick return.
All right. The other really, I guess, highlight for me in special teams is punt returner. You've got three guys here, Antonio Chenault, Antoine Winfield Jr., and Demetrius Douglas.
You do. And Chenault has been the guy getting all the first team reps when I was there during 2 days. Now, has a lot changed since 2 days? Absolutely. But it is worth noting that he was the one that Minnesota wanted to start there. Antoine Winfield being listed there is interesting because I didn't really see him get too many reps, but I did see Demetrius Douglas also work in there. So my guess would be it's Chenault's gig to start. And unless he starts to have some issues with ball control and dropping balls and going Craig James on the bit, it's tough for me to see someone outside of Chenault knowing how important Antoine Winfield is and Demetrius Douglas are. I'm not saying Chenault is any more or less important, saying he's, you know, the starting corner, but I think that it makes more sense to put him there than the other two.
All right. So otherwise, you know, kicking wise, there's not a lot of surprises here. Emmett Carpenter is going to return as your place kicker. It'd be interesting who takes kickoff duties. I'd imagine it'll be Carpenter, but it's very possible that it could be someone else. Ryan Santoso is going to be your punter. Peyton Jordahl, again, your long snapper.
I don't want to gloss over the punter position because I still think that Minnesota could use Jacob Herbers.
Yeah, we talked about that, right?
I still think that platooning punters is a very realistic scenario.
Yeah.
Especially from the people I've talked with them last week. I've been told from sources within the coaching staff that was a battle that was going to come down to Thursday, and there's still maybe even being a plan on the back burner to use both in different kind of situations. Maybe use Santoso as your, you know, trying to flip field position guy, so going 20 to 20, and you use Herber as your
corner.
Yeah. So I also think that they probably will have a different kind of kickoff guy. The issue is we never saw any kickoffs during fall camp in the six practices I was at. So maybe John Mack is that guy.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I guess Holder, Jacob Herbers, all important position that is often looked over. And again, this is a university that's known for their holders with Pete Mortel, you know, winning Holder of the Year. So got to give the Holder a shout out.
Herbers and Jordan are all the unsung heroes of an Emma Carpenter first team all Big Ten last year. I assure you of that.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit of defense. I guess defensive line wise, maybe the only surprise is that they're calling Carter Coughlin and Blake Cashman defensive ends, but you know your starters at tackle are Steven Richardson, Merrick Jackson, and then defensive end Winston Dilatabudere. Is your other starting defense?
I'm going to get you to pronounce his last name correctly by the end of this. By the end of this year,
it's so hard. Winston.
Say it with me,
Dilatti Boudere. How's that?
Yes. Winston Dilatti Boudere.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you really want to emphasize, you can Dilatti Boudere. Oh, I screwed it up. I'm just not going to go back on that. So, when you look at the defensive line, I think the biggest thing there is where's Jerry Gibson and why is Nate Umlor listed? Because Jerry Gibson got far more reps than Nate Umlor ever got in terms of meaningful reps. So why I don't exactly understand why you'd want to burn Nate Umlor's red shirt when you can just have Jerry Gibson slide in there. So I'm going to be interested to see, you know, is that just a bunch of fluff? So Nate Umlor is listed on the 2D, but he doesn't play. We'll have to find out. No surprises. We'll get to somebody in the doghouse here in a second. But you look at defensive tackles, no surprises. Merrick Jackson, Steven Richardson, Gary Moore, Andrew Stelter. I have heard that they may want to rep in Royal Silver III, which I don't exactly understand why, considering Minnesota has four competent defensive tackles ahead of him. But we'll have to see how that works out. And then finally, at that rush end spot, two Eden Prairie players in Carter Coughlin and Blake Cashman. Mm-hmm. Now, the rumor had been I got a text from a former Minnesota coach back in late July saying, don't be surprised if Blake Cashman starts at rush end. And so I go to practice. I go to six practices. Never once did he get a rush end rep during a non-passing situation where they weren't doing a creative blitz. Mm-hmm. So I still anticipate Carter Coughlin being the guy, especially on rushing downs. Now, maybe they do some different things and be creative on passing downs, but that's remaining to be seen. You'll notice the name not there is Teyon Devers.
Yeah.
Now, I went on Twitter today and I said, you know, I think Devers is still will play on passing downs. And then I checked into it and turns out he's been on scout team for the last 2 weeks. So it sounds like Mr. Teyon Devers is in the doghouse. So don't be expecting him to really play, especially here early on, because obviously they've put in their install for the week. What's their game plan going to be? Teyon Devers wasn't a part of that. So we'll see how long it's been or how long it's going to be until Teyon gets himself out of the pass rushing doghouse. But Minnesota's got more than enough pass rushers, because you look at linebacker, Kamal Martin listed as the starter, Jonathan Celestine listed as the starter. Those are your two outside linebackers. But the more interesting part is Thomas Barber was able to hold off Cody Polk. Now, it looked early on that Barber was going to be able to do so, but then Cody had a couple of good practices. And then when I left back on the 17th of August for the final practice, Barber was reasserting himself again. So, again, Minnesota's listed as a 4-3 team here. They're, from what I saw in fall camp, they're going to be a base nickel team, which would mean Kamal Martin comes off the field and it's just Barber and Celestine, and then you bring on an extra defensive back, which we'll get to. But Blake Cashman is listed as the number two at the end position behind Carter Coughlin and behind Jonathan Celestine, which makes a lot of sense to me. The other interesting part is Jalen Waters being listed on the 2D.
That was a surprise to me.
That was out of nowhere.
I thought if anything, they'd put Jalen Waters at like defensive end, like that rush defensive end.
Yeah, if you were to switch Blake Cashman and Jalen Waters on this depth chart, I'd be pretty excited.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm a little bit interested to see what they have in store for Jalen Waters.
I'm also
folks will remember him where Jalen Waters, Thomas Barber, and Blake Cashman are the three best special teams players that Minnesota has.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see if Jalen Waters has actually worked in on defense or if he's just a special team star.
Yeah. The other one that kind of stuck out to me is there is no Josh Huff in the linebacker 2Ds. I know that
Julian Huff.
Why did I say Josh Huff?
So seeing Julian Huff not listed, but Jalen Waters listed again, just, I don't know how much stock to put into it. Again, we will all find out come Buffalo, because it's much more locked down in terms of information than in previous years. So we will have to find out.
Yeah. So that was something that stuck out to me. I guess then looking at cornerback, I mean, this just screams, you know, lacking depth. But you look at cornerback, they're starting Antonio Chanel and Keandre Thomas, but your backups are Zoe Creighton and Coney Durr. And I mean, I didn't see as many practices as you, but Coney Durr, I couldn't even believe that he's even on the two deeps.
That one, again, I don't really want to place a lot of stock into it, because when I saw Coney Durr 12 days ago, he was still running around with a very good limp to him. So I would expect Ray Estes to be pushing there. Ray Estes was playing over Zoe Creighton as well. So when you look at the two deeps, you don't see any true freshmen, but I still do anticipate all three true freshmen playing. Kendarian Handy Holly at safety, because Minnesota, again, lists himself as a 4-3, but they played a ton of nickel. So what that means is Antoine Winfield Jr. slides down to nickel. You bring in Jacob Huff off the bench in theory, and then you have Duke McGee back there as well. And that means Handy Holly is the backup to McGee and Huff, and Akunle Ayinde is the backup to Antoine Winfield. So, folks, so also remember that even though Duke McGee is listed as the starter, he will not be starting. He has to sit out a first half because of a targeting penalty last year in the bowl game. So I think you're going to be seeing a lot of Jacob Huff, Antoine Winfield, and Akunle Ayinde here in the first half. So it's a depth chart. At least we have something to talk about, something to reference. But we'll see how accurate it is as the season goes on.
All right, let's get into the Buffalo Bulls a little bit. This is a squad, as we said, coming off a 2-10 season. They've actually only been in Division One, 1A basically since 1995 or 1993. Sorry. So they started in the FCS in 93 in 1AA. They're a squad that hasn't had a ton of success, but they do have something on the Gophers, Ryan. They have something called a first-round draft pick in this decade. Can you name who that is?
I certainly can. His name is Khalil Mack, and he's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL for the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, I was doing a little research and saw that, and I was like, oh, yeah, that does stick out. Another interesting tidbit is this squad basically has had some recent success relative to the Gophers. They had a conference title in 2008. So that's something to write home. But otherwise, you know, other than that, they haven't had a lot of success in recent years.
No. And so you look at this Buffalo team, year three for Lance Leopold. And if that name sounds familiar to you, it should. If you are a Midwest college football fan, because Lance used to be the longtime coach at Wisconsin Whitewater, the D3 power that was, I think currently still is as well. So he went from Wisconsin Whitewater to Buffalo, and the transition hasn't exactly been kind. It's a Buffalo team that went 2-10 last year, 1-7 in the MAC. And again, this was a PJ Fleck team that beat and stomped down the Bulls 38-0 last year. So you look at this Buffalo Bulls team and you look at their offensive stats from last year, 111th out of 128 teams in total offense. They were 126th in scoring offense out of 128 teams, so they were the third worst team in America. They scored 16 points a game. And then you flip to their defense. Shocker that if they're not scoring any points, they're getting a lot of points scored against them. While they, you know, in air quotes, have a top 15 passing defense because they only gave up 181 yards a game. That's because they were the fifth worst rushing defense in America, giving up over 250 yards a game on the ground. So, and you look at what they had, I believe, four all MAC team players last year. Somehow there were three teams, two of them return, one being a very important linebacker for them by the name of Khalil Hodge. But again, this isn't really a team that should give me much worry. They don't give me much worry. Because the statistics from last year don't exactly give them a gleaming endorsement. The other thing to note here, Luke, is that there is a former Gopher quarterback coach connection. Can you name the Buffalo Bulls quarterback coach?
Well, no. I can picture his
Jim
face.
Jim Zembrowski.
Yeah. I could picture his face, but couldn't get a name out.
I'm proud of you. So if you look, or, you know, if that name sounds familiar to you, well, it should. He was Minnesota's quarterback coach from, I believe, 2011 to 2015. So if you want to look at the Gopher quarterback progressions, here's the guy leading the charge now.
Not only was he the quarterback coach, but he was like the passing game coordinator. We found out like way, way later in the game that he and Lime Grover split duties there. Right.
Yeah, it's complicated. So anyway, yeah. Jim Zabrowski is the one there that's the quarterback coach. So and there's also a former Minnesota O-line GA there who's the O-line coach by the name of Daryl Egg Palsa as well. So there are a couple of connections from Minnesota to Buffalo.
Okay, I guess from my perspective, what I'm curious about is, you know, how are the Gophers going to approach this game? I got to imagine it's going to be run heavy because, you know, that seemingly is kind of the weakness of Buffalo and obviously the strength of the Gophers. But I guess more for me, it's, you know, what can we anticipate out of Buffalo? I've heard PJ talk about the quarterback that they have being a guy that they recruited while they were at Western Michigan. He's supposed to be assumingly a dual threat. That's a tall guy, like 6'6", 6'7". Do you know what they're going to do stylistically offensively?
I believe they're very similar in terms of what Minnesota is going to want to do. So again, a base three wide receiver set. They have a quarterback by the name of Tyree Jackson is his name. He was a redshirt freshman last year. He is a very tall drink of water too, and he's a load, 6'6", 245 pounds. So when you look at his passing statistics from last year, 53% of his passes were completed, a touchdown to interception ratio of 1-to-1, 9 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. He was also the second leading rusher on the team with 472 rushing yards, 5 rushing touchdowns. So he was someone that turned down, I believe, UConn and I think one other BCS offer to go to Buffalo, and someone that PJ recruited. So again, this is going to be kind of a dual threat kind of a team. They're going to want to obviously try and get back to the running game a little bit. They did lose their leading rusher from last season. So again, I'm not exactly tremendously concerned about this offense. If Tyree Jackson gets it going, I mean, I'm going to be a little bit concerned because again, his statistics from last season, he is, I think he does have a lot of talent, especially athletically, but this is, shouldn't be an offense that Minnesota's defense, you know, can't get in the backfield with their front four.
All right. So, I'd imagine that you're picking this to be a Gopher win, and I know that the current spread on the game is 26 points. So what is your point outcome for this game?
Well, the spread says 50, and it's a 25 point, Minnesota's 25 point favorite. So if I want to be a Vegas man, I would say that the score is going to be 38-13, but I think it's going to be 38-17, and I think there's going to be a late touchdown there. But I mean, there are a few other things that I think we should touch on. I know we were talking in the pre-production meeting about it, Luke. I was just absolutely taken aback when I looked at the Buffalo scoring output from last year, because again, I knew they weren't very good, and I wanted to see how it broke down by quarters. So again, you know the answer, but when I looked at how many total points that in 12 games Buffalo scored last year in the first quarter, they scored 10 total first quarter points in 12 games. That's absurd. And then I looked, okay, well, if they're not scoring points there, where are they? You know, what's the next worst quarter? They scored 22 points total in the third quarter in 12 games.
So you're basically
32 points to start the game and to start the second half. So this is not a very fast starting team, if I can reiterate anything today.
Yeah, so basically they scored just under 1 point a quarter in the first quarter and just over 1 point a quarter in the second quarter or in
the
third quarter.
So if Buffalo comes out hot and puts up like 10 on the board, you can expect something on social media from me saying Buffalo scored 10 total points in all of 2016 in the first quarter, and they just put that up in 12 minutes against Minnesota. Again, will it mean anything? Probably not, because Minnesota is going to probably be able to run the ball down their throats, considering you look at what Buffalo had last year. Again, statistically, they were a bottom three team. When you look at what Football Study Hall said about them in terms of advanced analytics, they were the sixth worst rushing defense of last season. So they gave up more than 5 yards a carry. Teams averaged over 250 yards. So my ideal scenario is Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, both get a touchdown, both go for over 100 yards, and the Minnesota moving company trademark Paul Allen is able to get off to a good start here.
All right, so it'll be an interesting start to the PJ Fleck era. Again, a Thursday night game, kickoff at what, 6 p.m.?
6 p.m. on BTN. Yeah. Glenn Mason's going to be working the game as well. And just as a reminder too, folks, we will be back on Monday, but there will be no Derek Burns as he is on assignment up in Canada somewhere. So I know it's been also a very busy week on GI here, you know, talking about this Buffalo game, talking about the depth chart, looking in terms of how the recruits are doing in their first few games. Hint, spoiler alert, some of them are doing extremely well, and there's video to prove it. So if there was ever a time to kind of get on board here at Gopher Illustrated, PJ Fleck's first season, you're kicking off Thursday. You've been a loyal listener to this podcast for years now. Pull the trigger, folks. I promise you won't be disappointed.
All right. So thank you all for listening. If you want to rate the podcast, you can do that. We'd appreciate it. It's a mechanism by which people can find us. And thanks for listening. Go Gophers.